You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Hey guys, it's Dan Jonker here. I'm one of the founders of Coach Calls Timeout, the online basketball coaching resource. I won't get too much into it because we have a great interview today, but if you're a basketball coach, you won't find a resource like this anywhere else. We have plays and drills in video format that you can download directly to your laptop, tablet, or phone. You can check it out at CoachCallsTimeout.com. In today's podcast episode, I was lucky enough to interview someone very special in my life, my former coach while I played at Wilfrid Laurier University, Peter Campbell. Coach Campbell is someone that came into my life at the perfect time. I just spent 2 years playing basketball for a different university where the school and the program didn't really suit my personality. I loved my teammates while I was there, but my love for basketball disappeared. I decided to transfer, and when you transfer schools, you have to sit out playing basketball for 1 year. While I was sitting out, I had committed to go to Wilfrid Laurier University. And unfortunately, at the end of that season, the coaches were let go, and I found myself in limbo. I decided to go to Laurier anyway, and luckily for me, they hired Peter Campbell. He was well known in Ontario, Canada for his very successful run as head coach at Laurentian University, so I was pretty confident in my decision to go there. Within the first 2 months of playing for Coach Campbell, my love for basketball was restored. In this interview, you'll get a sense of the kind of passion he feels for the game of basketball, coaching, and his players. I played for Campbell 15 years ago, and I'm sure my life would be very different had I not met him. This year, Coach Campbell decided to retire, and I was lucky enough to chat with him and reminisce about his early coaching days and what he's going to miss when he's retired. A couple days prior to this interview, it was the last home game of the season for Wilfrid Laurier. It acted as a senior day where everyone honored the graduating players, and it was also a time to reflect and share stories about Coach Campbell. I was blown away with how many past players showed up for the event, but when you hear him talk, you'll understand why so many of us are still in contact with him. So let's get to it.
Hello.
Coach Dano.
How are you, Dano?
Good. How you doing?
I'm okay.
That's good. You got a few minutes to chat?
I do.
Okay.
What am I going to chat about?
I just wanted to outline your coaching journey and have you talk about maybe how it all started and throughout the years quickly and how we've come to this now, retirement. One of the interesting things, I guess, that I learned over the weekend when we had the senior day and day for you is that you actually started out as a principal. I didn't even know that.
Keep certain surprises. I didn't start out as a principal. I worked my way up to being a principal.
Yes.
It took me 19 years to get there. I was a slow learner in everything I've done. It took me 15 years to get out of Laurentian. Most kids could do it in 4 or 5. It's taken me 16 to get out of Laurier.
So did you ever coach youth basketball or high school or anything before?
Yeah. I started out coaching elementary school. It's senior public, I guess, in elementary. And then I branched out into the club stuff on the girls' side. Yeah. And then I went from there to I went to teach secondary school in Woodstock at College Ave. And there I coached high school girls. The junior boys team 1 year and helped with the senior boys team 1 year, a year that they went to OFSA. And then I went back into the elementary to be a vice principal. And at that time, I was already coaching the Ontario women's team at that time. So I started coaching Fanshawe College. I was over in Thamesford, so it was close to London. So I started coaching Fanshawe College women. At the same time, we're moving through that. I was helping with the Western women, so I was spreading myself a little thin there. And I had that going, and then in 85, I got a chance. I left the provincial team. I coached the provincial team from 79 to 84, I think. And then in 85, I went with the national women's team as an assistant. And at the same time, I went to Laurentian as the head coach of the men's team.
Okay.
So I coached across the spectrum of our game, both guys and girls, and I've coached both the Ontario men's and women's team. I've had lots of variety, which has been good.
What kind of decision-making process went through, you know, not being a principal anymore to taking a full-time coaching job?
Yeah, initially I was on a what they called a 4/5, so I had a year off anyway. And I was going to take the next year off, and initially I was thinking I'd go back to school and do some more studies or, you know, something like that, and maybe just coach the Western women, because it would be nice and easy from Oxford County. And at the last minute, Peter Ennis called me from Laurentian and said that their men's coach had resigned at the last minute to go do an MBA, get out of coaching, and it was too late for them to get anybody good. Would I consider coming up for the year? And I said, sure, what the hell? So I applied, went through the process. They offered me the job. So I talked Jackie into going to Sudbury for a year. And that's how it started. We were going for 1 year. She was going to do a little teaching in the kinesiology program there, some of the activities and stuff. And she was pregnant at the time, so Jamie was going to be born in Sudbury. And then we were going to come back to Oxford County and continue with teaching. Yeah. At the end of that year, Laurentian made an offer to me to stay and work with the president towards the Sudbury was hosting the World Junior Track and Field Championships, and I could represent the president, and so they'd do some things salary-wise to make it worth staying. And the Sudbury board was keen to hire Jackie. So because I was working with the national team, my superintendent in Oxford told me they'd give me a leave of absence. Initially, they were going to second me, but they'd give me a leave of absence through to the end of the Olympic run so that I wouldn't be trying to get away to coach with the national team, leaving a school since I was the principal. So yeah. It'd be easier for them if I just stayed coaching, and so that's how we set it up. And at the end of that time, and we had a decision to make, and by then, Jackie loved Sudbury, loved the board in Sudbury, and I was really enjoying what I was doing, and so we stayed. And then that led to 15 years in Sudbury and 16 more here, and that's why I'm retiring. Late.
Did you ever imagine that it would be that long in one place?
No, I think when I went to Sudbury, I thought I was going for a couple of years. Peter Ennis was there as the women's coach, and he was at the time, he was my best friend, and we'd been coaching together with the provincial women's team, and I thought it'd be fun and be a good learning environment for me, and I could bounce ideas off each other and, you know, be really productive. And I'd grow as a coach, and then when I came back and I was going back to doing my own thing, I'd be even better at it. And that's how I went, and I thought it'd be a good learning experience. And then as it turned out, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the guys, and I wasn't sure I would enjoy the guys. I really did enjoy those guys, and so I got excited about it, and then I got the opportunity to stay. So a lot of it's been luck, you know. A lot of it's been you were fortunate to get the first chance, and then the chance to stay on, and then
and hang on after that.
Yeah, and then Baxter recruited me to come here, and
yeah,
that was another opportunity. And it was a good time to go. Pete had passed away, so I didn't have I didn't have that tie to stay in Sudbury, and the constant on the road stuff was getting to me a little bit. Jack's parents were getting older, and they live in London, so it made sense to come down here where you're closer to home, you're in and out. Now I had to convince Jackie to leave Sudbury. That was a hard part. I'd had to talk her into going, now I had to talk her into coming out. So both times it was a challenge. So fortunately she's agreed both times, and
somehow you won those. I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't either. I tell you, the first year here, I was wishing I hadn't.
Yeah.
Between her accident and our basketball team, and I was wishing that, boy, I should have just stayed in Sudbury, and life would have been easier. But, you know, I think what has allowed me to stay coaching as long as I have is the fact that I have changed schools, and that the new challenges have got you going again, right? I think
yeah.
you can get into a rut a little bit if you stay too long at any one place. I think that's really helped me.
So speaking of challenges, you went from women's to men's. Is there a big challenge for that?
Well, I thought the big challenge would be getting the guys to listen to me. They would perceive me to be a women's coach and therefore, you know, not quite as good as they were as players. So I went in and I went after them hard right from the start and really kicked their butt. And they were awesome. They just bought in, and we won some things early, which helped, I'm sure. We won a tournament at Lakehead, our first tournament, and they were thrilled because they'd never won anything. And so it made it easier to buy in, right? God, we must be doing the right thing. And this guy must be good. And I was as shocked as they were, but I didn't tell them that. And, you know, and we progressed through. So, Yeah, that was. I thought it was a big challenge. I mean, the game's the same. Egos are a lot different. Getting credibility with them is a lot harder, I think.
Yeah.
So, that was a great experience for me.
So you mentioned Peter Innes. Did you have any other, I'm assuming he was kind of a mentor as well as a friend, but did you have any other coaching mentors or help along the way that has kept you where you are?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I started out in Oxford County teaching, there were three high school coaches who were very good, three or four high school coaches that were very good at the time. Dick McKenzie was one, and he was coaching a senior men's team where we were playing on, and he would have been my first mentor as a coach. I think I learned a lot from him. And at the same time, in Oxford County, there was a guy named Brian O'Rourke, Chris's dad, Chris is at Guelph, and Brian was running a great program in Tilsonburg, and every time you got to watch them or listen to them in a clinic, you were learning from him. And at the same schools I was at, Peter Ewing was there, Bill Gillespie was over here in Park, and they were very good coaches, and they were all involved in the game, and they all started out being mentors to everybody, right? And then I got lucky. I got involved with as the provincial women's coach, I got involved with the national program. So I got to come over and watch Don McRae work when he was coaching the national women's team. And so I learned a lot from him and the way he worked around camps and everything else. And then the same with Shields. I got to go out to Victoria, to the national team programs out there when Ken was running them. And so you learned, you know, every opportunity you were learning something. And so they all were factors in it. Pete and I were kind of comparable. We were starting out together, but we were mentors to each other. You know, he had ideas that I didn't have, and I had ideas that he didn't have. So it really, it was a great relationship that way. You were charging each other up at all times. So, and then once I got into the OUA, and you know, you've got Bob Bain was here, and he hadn't lost a game in about a gazillion years. So you were learning from him, and the camaraderie of those guys, the way they accepted you, Bain and Horwood and all those guys that were coaching at the time, really made you feel like you were part of something, and made life a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah. Is it a little different now? I mean, it doesn't seem like the coaches hang out or chat as much as maybe they used to.
Oh, for sure. It's changed. Yeah. Everybody, this day and age, the competitiveness, or not the competitiveness, because those guys were as competitive as anybody, but there's more of a cutthroat nature to it, and there's less camaraderie for sure amongst the coaches, which is too bad, because there's only a limited number of guys that do this for a living in this country, and every now and again you need somebody to understand what you're going through, and they're the only other people that really understand what you're going through.
Yeah, there's enough pie for everybody. You can share and still succeed.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So as you switch from Laurentian to Laurier, there's always expectations, and you know the community has all these expectations with a new coach and everything like that. How do you manage that?
First year was tough because, you know, Jack had the bad accident, and so your focus was split. You know, you're trying to do it, and we didn't have any time to recruit. So there was, you know, you happened to come in, and Al Lovett had been kind of recruited, and he came in, and we got lucky that way. We got some guys that became important parts of what we were trying to do. But that's been a tough one, because I don't feel in the 16 years that I've actually met those expectations. I don't think we've been as successful as I hope we would be since I came down here. And we had that little brief run of real good stuff, but other than that, we've been pretty good, but we've never been very good. So that's disappointing to me.
You've always got these recruits coming in, and it's hard to know what they're going to be, I guess, or if they're going to stick around as long as you expect them to.
Yeah, that's one of the tough things. Here there's some, you know, there's changes. Been changes in guys over time. Certainly when I was at Laurentian, the expectation was that you'd stay 5 years, right? You were coming to play basketball and get a degree. So the expectation was you were going to play 5 years of basketball. And in the planning, then there's a longer time for you to develop into a good player. And here at Laurier, there's fewer of those guys that are committed to being here 5 years. There's some academic expectations that force others of them not to be here 5 years.
Yeah.
And that really makes it tougher. You know, I've always thought that the guys in the CCA had life a lot harder than we do, because until recently they were getting guys for 2 and 3 years, and the turnover was incredible, and it's a lot harder to develop a good program with that kind of turnover than it is when you know you've got guys 4 or 5 years and they're evolving into good players, and as one group graduates, another group comes in and takes their place, and maybe you get a super guy in every now and again, and he jumps ahead, and good for him, and that makes you better. But the building of the nucleus is what leads to your success.
Kind of like a culture, I guess. It winning breeds more winning.
I believe that if the culture is holding each other accountable, then the winning will come.
Yep.
And I think for sure by the end of my time at Laurentian, I was spoiled that the locker room was holding everybody accountable and removed that responsibility from me. I was just putting together the pieces and we were playing and it was growing great. And the guys were holding each other accountable, and there was a lot less of my discipline, if you want, that was necessary. And that made us a better basketball team. And I think, certainly in the last few years here, that's been one of our problems. We haven't had a culture in the locker room where guys are holding each other accountable to put their best out on the floor at all times, and practice at all times in games, to accept responsibility when they screw up, accept responsibility when they don't perform well, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like, well, it must be somebody else's fault, can't be mine. And you don't ever win that way. You don't ever achieve success that way.
I remember playing for you, you always had the one line that sticks out the most is when you're pointing at someone to blame them, remember there's three fingers pointing back at you.
Yeah, I stole that one from Jay Triano with the junior team.
Yeah.
91, I think, or 90, and he used that, and I thought, boy, is that a great idea. And yeah, so true, right? You know, if you want to blame somebody else, what did you do to make sure that didn't happen? And if you can find a couple of things you did, then okay, now you should talk to that guy. Doesn't mean you should let him off the hook, but you got to work with him to correct that. Because if you're working with him, we're going to get better. And if you're holding him accountable, we're going to get better. And if he has the right to hold you accountable, boy, we're going to be great. And I think in the really good years, certainly at Laurentian, we had that. Guys held the guys accountable. The older guys more so, but the younger guys were accepted as part of the deal. And they had responsibilities and everything else, but everybody was in it together, and I think that's what made us successful.
I think you had that as well when you went to the year that you went to Nationals at Laurier. The older guys were able to make people accountable.
And that was a good group of older guys, right?
Yeah.
They had done a lot together. They got along well, and then we had that little inspirational boost when Trevor came back from his broken neck, and all those little things contributed.
That was the first recruiting class at Laurier.
Yeah, the first two were very good. Yeah. I don't know if I've matched them since, but those first two recruiting classes were very good here, yeah.
Does that play into the decision to retire, I guess? Like, recruiting is a grind.
Yeah, and it's evolved.
A lot of gyms to go to. And
I don't really mind that so much. It's all the social media stuff, and I'm not really a social media guy, as you're well aware.
Your emails are 1 to 5 words maximum.
Yeah, so, you know, that evidently tends not to get their attention.
So yeah,
we're getting a different kind of guy, because we're getting guys that don't need to be courted, don't need to be chased, don't need to be have their butts kissed all the time, right? But we're missing out on some good guys because they do need that. And, you know, and guys are leaving in grade 10 or grade 11, and the only way you can stay a hold of them is through social media and all that. And guys are coming back from 3 years in prep school, and you're like, God, where the hell did you go? I remember you in grade 10, but I haven't seen you since.
Is that the biggest change, do you think, in high school ball in Canada here? Like, how do you keep track of people?
That's right. I find that's really hard. You've got to be one of those guys that's on that all the time, I think, to stay on top of those kids. And, you know, it's really hurt high school basketball in Ontario. You used to be able to go to OFSA and, the top 6 or 8 teams, maybe 12 teams even in the top division, all had 2 or 3, maybe 4 good players on them that you could actually be thinking of recruiting.
Yeah.
And now a few of them have won, and maybe the top 2 or 3 have a couple, but the depth of the tournament isn't as good as it once was, and it's because of all these kids going to prep school and leaving early, and, you know, it's really impacted and the club ball's helped with the recruiting because there's more club tournaments, but all that does is increase, you know, the number of times you've got to go watch them, the number of times they want to be told they're playing well, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's one of the factors. Certainly, the recruiting is a factor that's leading me to retirement. My age is a big factor leading me to retirement.
Fair enough, yeah.
And the other one, you know, and it's become more responsibility of fundraising and everything else. It's less about, you still got to coach basketball, but there's so many other things you're doing. And it's originally, that wasn't why I signed up. I signed up to coach basketball.
Yeah.
But, and I'm still enjoying it. I have to, you know, I still really enjoy that. I enjoy the practices. I enjoy the preparation for practice. I enjoy the games. I enjoy the team camaraderie. I enjoy all that still. So hopefully that I'll find a way to stay involved in those parts of the game.
You can be the alumni coach.
I don't know. Those guys don't listen very well. I've watched them when they beat us. They don't listen to each other very well. Actually, I shouldn't say that. They listen to each other better than my guys listen to each other.
Yeah.
But you guys here, I always look forward to our alumni games here because the guys that come back are such good guys and have such a good time doing it. So it's always been a highlight for me of the year is when we have an alumni game and we have a competitive game and then go have a beer and everybody tells stories.
Yeah, that's the thing that I love. I mean, Saturday's event for the seniors and for yourself, there were a lot of alumni there.
There sure were. It was amazing.
I mean, you had 10 guys from Laurentian. You had 25 guys that played for you at Laurier. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was thrilled. And it started early because, with about 2 minutes to go or less than 2 minutes to go, those Teddy Dongleman's and Corey Bailey and Flash, Kevin Gordon sat down behind us and started yelling things I'd yelled at them, I would guess, at me. And I was trying to keep a straight face, but oh my gosh, that was funny because I knew I'd said those things and they were having so much fun yelling at me. And to think that they would come that far just to watch that game, for me, it was a big thrill that those guys, that all you guys came back and that made a lot of fun.
I mean, listening to those guys, especially the guys who played for you, you know, 20 something years ago, it's interesting how different of a person you are than, or a coach you are. I mean, they have stories. Yeah, that's their words. It might even be a little harsher than that, but, how do you, I mean, obviously you've had to adapt. Is it a conscious decision? Is it?
Sure, part of it is, yeah.
Is it doctor recommended?
No. It may be wife recommended, but I don't even think so. No, it's an evolution because the guys I started with at Laurentian before I left the Laurentian were already telling the guys I was coaching at Laurentian what a candy ass I had become, that I was way tougher with them than I ever was with these guys. So, and it's evolved, but, and part of it was at the start, you were trying to impose your will on a group of guys. By the time Bales and Swords and those guys came along, that was the culture of our team. So I no longer had to impose it as much, but I had to maintain it. And so I was a tough guy there. And our environment in the gym made it possible to be a lot more volatile because we had huge crowds, lots of noise. The referees couldn't hear you. I could really get after guys. I could get after the referees, and the only people that were hearing it were the people it was directed right at, and who were right there. So, and then once I came here, a little different atmosphere. So you had to bend a bit towards that. And then some of the guys I'm coaching now might not have lasted a week at Laurentian. They wouldn't have got through dryland at Laurentian with the ski hills and everything else. They wouldn't have got through that. They'd have just folded their tent and gone home. So you've had to evolve because you want to, you know, you're trying to keep a team together. You're trying to keep a group going. You're trying to move forward. So I've had to adapt my approach to it for sure.
Obviously, it's been successful. Not many people get to retire as a coach. So you've stuck around.
I said that to Coach Razzle. I'm very lucky that I got to call my own departure. Not everybody gets to do that, and that's really fortunate. And a lot of that is the guy I've worked for the last 16 years has been a huge supporter. He's left me alone to do what I'm doing. He supported me whenever he could, but basically he's allowed me to be manager of basketball operations and decide what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and where we're going. So that his support has really made it possible for me to get to this spot. And then Jackie's support to allow me to keep doing this for 31 years has been a big factor too. And
yeah. And
not only allowing me, but then being invested in the group. And you heard the guy say on Saturday how much coming to the house for dinner, how much having Jackie at cheering for them at all times. I mean, at one point at Laurentian, we had to move her because she was sitting too close to the video, and she'd be yelling at them how well they were playing, and I'd be ripping them for how badly they were playing as we're watching the video, and they'd say, but Coach, Jackie thinks we're doing okay. We're going to move her ass out of there. But she's always been a huge fan, and she's always been an integral part of the team, and she certainly her investment has allowed me to get away with some of the things, some of the toughness I've given out, because she tempers it by having everybody over for dinner, and everybody goes away thinking what a great group this is and what nice people they are, and coach isn't really as bad when you get out of the gym. I say that all the time to these guys. If all you're going to do is deal with me in the gym, this is what you're going to think. If you deal with me outside the gym, you'll probably not think that.
Yeah.
And then it's up to you.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always loved that you've brought in. Jackie's a part of it. Now Jamie's a part of it. Your son, you've got a nice family atmosphere going on. Did you ever coach John or Paul?
Yeah, John played for me for 5 years at Laurentian.
Oh, yeah.
Paul not.
Paul did. He didn't play?
No. He played some high school ball and then decided that wasn't the way he was going to go and went a totally different way. And then he helped at U of T for a little bit with Coach Alinek. And when the Dressler guys were there and they had a pretty good team, and he got involved a little bit. He moved back to Toronto and he got involved with them a little bit. And then Jamie played for me here for a year or two.
Yep.
And so Johnny played 5 years. I was tough on him, I'll tell you, his first year. His teammates
were
voting for him.
How...
His teammates were voting for him to play more, and I was voting for him to play less. So. And he handled it all great as far as I was concerned. I'm sure at the end he thought he could have played a lot more than he did in his first year.
Yeah.
But by the time he was done, he was an OUA All-Star, so everything had worked out. I think he loved playing at Laurentian. He certainly has lots of lifelong friends from his playing days there, and he became a heck of a basketball player, in my opinion, and he has become a real good coach. So.
Yep.
Probably the best coach in the family, I think.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
How big of an adjustment is it coaching your son compared to other people's sons?
For the first one, it was hard, right?
Yeah.
But by the time Jamie came along, less difficult. I'd survived coaching John, and it worked out well, and the teammates all liked him. So I had a plan. First time, I was you're trying to find your way through, right, without... You're not trying to destroy John, but at the same time, you're trying to make sure everybody knows he's not getting any favors.
Yeah.
And once we'd done that the first year, then it was never a factor after that. So then when Jamie came along, I'd already done it, so it was easier. But I think you got to be careful. If his teammates perceive that your son's getting an advantage, then it's going to cause nothing but problems for the team, and you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. I mean, even from Jamie's perspective, he's worried, or people are worried about talking about you in the locker room because he's in there. And
that's right.
It's a tough balance.
And what those guys don't realize is your son's probably got more bad things to say about you than anybody else. He's probably pissed off at you more than anybody else. Because he has to, Jamie said to me once when he was playing kids ball, I said something to him about, you're just like that kid. And he said, yeah, no, I'm not. I said, no, really, what you did today and what that kid does, that's the same. He said, yeah, no, the difference is that he's not in the car with you listening to this on the way home. He's already put out, he's gone. He doesn't care anymore. I got to go through this all the way. So I think in a lot of ways they've had it a lot worse. But as a player, you don't think that way. You think, oh, that's coach's kid, better be careful, right? And so it makes for a tough scenario for everybody.
We talked about your mentors, and now you're at the point of your career where you're able to mentor other people. I mean, your son John is coach at U of T, and Jamie's assistant with you. Falco's coaching the women's at Laurier. Swords at Laurentian. Like, your branches are reaching out now. Is that something that you're proud of now?
Oh, for sure. You know, I joke and say that I'm sure they decided to do it because they figured if I could do it, anybody could do it. And it didn't look that hard because I was having a good time doing it. So I'm pretty sure that's why they went into it. But, you know, you've got Gilpin at Bishop's. You've got Johnny at UAT. Swords and Hurley are coaching at Laurentian Falk down here. And for me, it's great to see. And Jamie's got an interest in coaching and he wants to learn to be a coach and is evolving into a pretty good one with his club teams. And it's something you feel good about now that they've all grown past what I taught them. And that's the thing I'm most proud of. You can see that they've brought things from other areas, right? John went to the NCI and Sorgi's played nationally and professionally. And you can see that they brought things in that they didn't get from me. And it's made them even better coaches. So not only did I get them started, but I left them with enough smarts to know that there was a lot to learn beyond what they'd learned from me. So they've become better.
Okay, Coach, now we're into the full court press of questions here. Just like any press, quick passes. We need quick, one-sentence answers here. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, you're up three with 5 seconds to go and the other team has the ball. Do you foul or do you let it play out?
When Borko was my assistant, we had that discussion. I am still hesitant to give anybody points. I haven't been able to bring myself to accept that that's a good idea.
Yeah,
I would play it out. I would hope our defense was good enough, and that would be the way I would play it. Rather than give them 2 points or give them a point and then screw up the rebounding process on the foul shot, watch them get an offensive rebound and score it, and we're tied.
Yeah.
I'd rather make them work for everything.
If you could spend one day as an assistant to any coach, past or present, who would it be?
Shields would be a great learning experience, I think.
Well, that'll be your answer. That's good.
That's kind of being a Canadian, I guess. And you know, I've spent time with him. I've spent time with Triano. So I've spent time and with McRae, as I said. So I spent time with a lot of our good Canadian coaches. So I've been spoiled that way. But you know, if you were looking in the States, the guy at San Antonio, I think would be a great way to spend
Popovich,
the day.
Popovich, yeah.
Popovich would be a great learning experience, I think.
Okay, if you could pick one player that you would want to coach, past
Steph
or present.
Curry.
Yeah, there you go.
Curry.
He'll keep you employed forever.
he just plays the game the way I'd like to see the game played. He's up and down. He's firing shots. He's moving the ball. He's having a great time doing it. Yeah, that would be it. I mean, and I've had some guys that had the same mentality, so I've been lucky that way. Maybe that's the recruiting process. They just weren't quite as good as Steph Curry. And don't play that to Sorgi because he'll probably tell me he is as good as Steph Curry, but never mind.
Favorite gym, visiting gym to play in? You can't pick Laurentian because that's a visiting gym now. They're still home.
See, that's my favorite gym.
I knew that's what you're going to take the easy way out.
But having only played there once, this new UAT gym is pretty spectacular. I think
it is nice.
I think I could get used to playing in there. And there was the night we were there, there was a good crowd. And so it was pretty good.
What's your favorite location that you've ever played in, like tournament wise, destination?
It would either be Majorca for the World Student Games or 1 year come back from the World Championships with Wayne Hussey and the national women's team. We played in Spain and we played on a beach, gym on a beach. So if you turned around and looked out the windows behind you, there were people walking the beach, windsurfers going by. I kind of like that. A little distracting for an ADHD guy like me with a short attention span. I had to watch myself to make sure I was watching the basketball game, but it was good.
Last question for you, and then I'll let you go. What are you going to miss most about coaching?
Players.
Yeah?
Players, the kids, the guys. Yep, for sure. You know, 10 years ago, I might have said to you the other coaches, but that's evolved. And most of the guys that were my era have retired before me. So the interaction with the guys, the excitement of the game, I suppose. The excitement of that 2-hour game, trying to win that game every day.
Okay, well, I'll let you go now. I've held you up longer than I said.
Yeah, you promised me 10 or 15 minutes.
No, thanks a lot, Coach.
Hey, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Talk to you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Peter Campbell. You can check out the show notes for this interview at coachcallstimeout.com/1. That's the number one. Wilfrid Laurier University has a program called Adopt a Hawk. It allows family, friends, and alumni to play a role in supporting student athletes. As you may know, Canadian athletes don't receive full scholarships, and any funding is greatly appreciated and necessary to compete at the national level. If you're interested in donating and helping improve Wilfrid Laurier sports programs, I'll provide a link in the show notes. Again, that's coachcallstimeout.com/1. Donors to the Adopt a Hawk program are recognized in the annual Golden Hawk newsletter, and they receive a charitable tax receipt, so it's a win-win. Coach Campbell, if you're listening to this podcast, first of all, thanks to whoever downloaded it for you. And second, thanks for everything you've done for me. The next episode we have is pretty cool. I'm not aware of any interviews quite like it. We have a basketball coaching roundtable with the three most decorated active Ontario college coaches. And to top it off, the discussion's moderated by one of the co-founders of Coach Calls Timeout, my brother Brian Jonker, who's also a very successful and national championship winning college head coach. If you enjoyed this podcast, please help us get noticed by iTunes and subscribe or leave a review. Reviews go a long way in helping others find us. You can also go to the show notes page and share it on social media. Thanks, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks for the next episode.